Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Phoenix, Arizona, it's time for Valley Business Radio, spotlighting the Valley's best businesses and the people who lead them.
Welcome to Valley Business Radio, where we tell the stories that traditional media tends to ignore and help connect you to the right people. I'm your host, Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and I'm joined in the studio today by Tyler Butler, founder and CEO of 1111 Consulting. Welcome, Tyler.
Hi, Adrian. Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being here. Tell us a little bit to set up our conversation about 1111 Consulting. How do you serve folks? What's your work?
Yeah, happy to. 1111 Consulting essentially helps companies that have a conscience put strategic programs into place that allow them to help the communities where they operate. So it can be everything from volunteerism to sponsorships and grants to roundup programs. It's a little bit of everything.
Tell us about the name, 1111.
Yeah. Well, 1111 has numerological values as far as altruism and giving back. And so I felt like being that number 11 is also something important to me growing up. It was my soccer number. It's been, you know, something that's repeated itself over and over in my life. So you add that together with the piece about numerology, and I felt like it was a cool name.
When did you start this? I know you have a long career in big companies. Love to hear a little bit about the backstory, but when was 1111 founded?
It's been over 2 years now, and really it came out of the opportunity that was being presented to me from so many different companies that just kind of needed a subject matter expert to come in and help them kind of craft a program. So the timing was fortuitous and kind of took advantage of it.
You were telling me before we turned the mics on that you had a nomadic childhood. And of course, for me, having spent, you know, over a decade in the Middle East, I'm imagining camels and tents and things, but that's not really what you mean. Talk about this peripatetic lifestyle as you grew up.
Vocabulary today. Lots of vocabulary. So I mean, my parents had a government construction company. And so I often say it was kind of nomadic because we would move every year to 2 years just based on projects that were bid. And I mean, we lived on the side of the Grand Canyon at one point, and this is when I was little, before, you know, school age. But so we moved around quite a bit and ended up in Tucson for high school. And my parents kind of thought, well, maybe we should like easy up on the kids now and let them have like a little bit of home life, if you will, grow up a little bit somewhere. So that kind of brought us to Arizona.
So you ended up in Arizona, what year of high school? Right at the beginning?
Yeah, the beginning
13,
of high school.
14,
something. You got it.
And what was that like going to high school in Tucson?
You know, Tucson's a great place to grow up. It's a great community. Maybe not a match for my personality, but it was interesting because I moved to Tucson from Nevada, from Las Vegas. And, you know, at that age, there was very much a different style, if you will, with what the kids were wearing in Vegas and what they were wearing in Tucson. And so I definitely had an adjustment period when I got settled in Tucson.
And then college at ASU?
For undergrad, I went to college at ASU and just kind of fell in love with Phoenix and kind of saw an opportunity to have a real home. So I decided to stay.
You know, it's interesting. I came here to Phoenix for the first time that I can remember because my cousin, Jeremy, who's more like a brother to me than a cousin, had spent his last 2 years of high school at a boarding school in Scottsdale. So we came to his high school graduation. And it was the early 90s. It was rollerblading on the Greenway and, you know, all the things that 18-year-old boys get themselves into. And I never in my wildest dreams imagined that 20 years later, my family would move here. My wife and I and our then 18-month-old came to house sit. And 4 months later, we moved out of that house. But 6 years later, we're still here.
Yeah.
And I'm just fascinated as I talk to more and more people here in the studio, the different kinds of stories that have brought people to this place that we now call home. How did you get into the world of big companies? And what was that part of your journey like?
Yeah, you know, so I was always kind of entrepreneurial. And when I graduated from college, I had an opportunity to be a founder, one of the founders of College Times. I don't know if you've ever seen that publication.
Sounds familiar.
It's like a junior New Times.
Yeah.
And it comes out weekly. And so that was started from the ground up. And I was part of that team. And it gave me an introduction to kind of all the business in town, as well as some really good experience with media and sales. And that kind of got me launched as far as just relationships. I had an internship at Sprint when cell phones were just kind of getting really hot and everyone had one. So I feel like that kind of was my entree into larger companies.
And how did it progress from there? So you had this experience starting the media company, doing some, did you do reporting for it as well? Or how?
Mostly advertising. Yeah. I did some writing, but for the most part, it was more of like an ambassadorship, promotional. I started the street team there. But after that experience, and I had gotten transitioned out of that, I decided I wanted to give nonprofit a try. I wanted to see what it felt like to drive home at the end of every day and feel really good about the work I was doing. And so I did. I worked at Easter Seals for a number of years and then over at the Arizona Humane Society and just, you know, enjoyed the experience of, you know, getting paid to give back, if you will.
Now, you've become something of a subject matter expert on the general topic of corporate social responsibility. And of course, that's a phrase. It was at one time kind of a buzzword, and now it's just sort of been normalized, I think, that could mean a lot of different things. What is corporate social responsibility mean, and what does it mean to be a practitioner in that field?
Really, corporate social responsibility is a company mandating to do business under their own ethos. So, you know, doing things that they know to be ethical, that they know to be legal. So it can be everything from the sustainability piece to the employee activation of volunteerism. It has been very generalized, and it does incorporate so many different arenas of giving. But you're kind of seeing it come into a time frame where it's more of a need to have than a nice to have at most companies. When I originally started in CSR more than 10 years ago, it was something that you only saw the bigger companies doing. You know, I can remember US Airways here and them doing a ton of giving back and having their corporate office here. And it's kind of me gleaming into the future and seeing that this kind of job and opportunity was becoming really commonplace and that was something I wanted to do. And just kind of through experience and some more education, came into my own with it.
Now, you've led global giving programs for Microsoft and many other international tech leaders. Is there something that stands out that you have really learned through that process that now informs the work you do as an independent consulting firm? I mean, what about that experience in the trenches now shapes the way you guide the companies you work with?
I think I have a unique viewpoint because I've worked both on the nonprofit side of, you know, trying to fundraise, as well as the giving side of doing something for philanthropy. So you kind of realize when you have that purview that as much as you want to believe that every nonprofit is just lined up and hungry for support, they too have goals and schedules. And, you know, you can't just step in as a company who wants to participate and do a volunteer project or, you know, even, you know, give a grant at some specific time. There has to be a synergy and a partnership between the nonprofit and the for-profit partner. And I think that sometimes people who haven't worked in nonprofit don't really understand and see that piece. So I feel like I've had that full circle view, which has really been helpful.
You're right. There really are two distinct, not only domains, but cultures. And again, neither side is monolithic. I mean, there are many different cultures, as many as there are nonprofit organizations. And the sense of identity and independence and wanting to, in many ways, control the narrative, even on the doing good side of the equation, really does require both parties to align their interests. And it's not as simple as if we write a big enough check, we get to call the shots. That would not be accepted by many nonprofits because it's not about the money. It's about the mission. It's about the message. How do you help the two sides of this equation align?
You know, it really is about shared values. The companies and the nonprofit really have to have some kind of shared understanding of what they're working towards. I can tell you I've worked at companies before that, you know, have undergone some kind of blemish to their reputation. And I couldn't beg nonprofits to take checks because they were concerned about how that would reflect on their image. So it really is a partnership. It really is like a meeting of the minds that they all have this certain thing or intention that they're going to follow through with. It's a branding exercise. Whatever brands you align with, they really do identify, you know, who you are and what you do and kind of the grasp of what people think of you as far as in the community.
It really is a branding exercise. And I wonder sometimes if the nonprofits for whom I am very fond and have my own deep history with, I wonder if they always fully understand this because it's not enough to do well, to do good, you have to also be seen to be doing good. And for many years, I worked in international organizations where we were responding to humanitarian emergencies. Mm-hmm. And there's an entire rhetoric of neutrality and not NGO-ness that kind of permeates these things. And oftentimes, an assumption that taking the moral high ground is enough, when in fact many of the organizations, and again, I'm sympathetic, but just being practical and describing the reality, many of these organizations have invested a lot of money into media, into advocacy, into private lobbying. Mm-hmm. And of course, that's an essential part of carrying out the mission, because you can't get people, you know, you can't get powerful, rich governments to solve problems in poor, forgotten crises unless you speak directly to their representatives and try to convince them to change either their vote in the UN Security Council or, mm-hmm. you know, their own domestic policies. So all these things have to work together. But the language that we used publicly to describe our work was very much that of kind of neutral angels, you know, helping poor, suffering people in faraway places. And that's kind of a trope in the media that we have relied on, I think, in many cases, mm-hmm. to our detriment. Companies, on the other hand, are often fighting their own public image problems as, you know, greedy capitalists simply wrecking everything that they touch. So there's a lot of landmines.
You know, you look at nonprofits and they're much more savvy, I feel like, than a lot of people give them credit to be with sharing their own narrative. And so I feel like they've done quite a good job of understanding that when a company comes in to support them, that they need assistance from the nonprofit in showcasing the positive results of the efforts from them supporting, you know, whatever they're doing in the community. And the same goes for, you know, the corporate side of that. They understand that they have to be creative in the way that they're going to share the story of how they're giving back. It can't come across as too self-serving, but it isn't altogether altruistic. It really is about making sure that people understand that they're committed to making a positive difference, that it's a part of kind of their ethos and the way that they operate as far as business is concerned, because that creates brand loyalty. And they get that now. And so that's why these programs are not, you know, a nice to have now. They're a need to have, because most companies are understanding that you have to get ahead of those stories and you have to be able to show how you've done, you know, some positivity for society.
There was a book that was written many years ago called The Selfish Altruist that specifically for these international relief organizations tried to knock some of their own ideologies from an inside and sympathetic point of view, but really busting up this assumption that we're simply doing good with no vested interest. And of course, mm-hmm. that's not true, because humans and, you know, everyone has differently situated commitments and benefits and so on. You mentioned that there's a whole range of programs and initiatives that companies can do. Can you help us navigate that landscape a little bit by categorizing the different types of things that might show up under the heading of corporate social responsibility?
Yeah, and what's interesting about corporate social responsibility is that it is such a wide breadth of offerings. It's not one specific thing. It has to be first guided by a really strategic mission and vision and focus. And so having an exercise where you have C-suite and other relevant stakeholders get together and really pinpoint, as you would like a business plan of sorts, what makes the most sense for your company and what you want to launch in order to kind of get those efforts going. One of the most basic programs that I always advocate for is anything around employee activation. Putting a good volunteer program into place that either has company-wide volunteer days, a Dollars for Doers program, which means that you give money on behalf of the employees that volunteer for a specific cause. So you're supporting their charity of choice and their efforts. Diversity and inclusion programs. I think those are a great way to activate employees, as well as to kind of showcase, you know, that your company is very all-inclusive. You can get employees together with that and kind of put like-minded people together that maybe are a part of, you know, a part of the population that aren't prevalent throughout the company. You know, grants and sponsorships, they're so important. And I think they get overlooked, especially nowadays with the sponsorship piece. There is, first of all, branding that can be had at events. Second of all, that's really how you're going to get noticed by the community and by the media, is by showcasing the fact that you are present, that you are giving in some capacity. I think strategic grants are great, because it's a great way to support whatever the mission and vision is of the company through community projects that are hopefully in line with their business. getting customers involved, I think, is super important in roundup programs. I mean, you can have someone rounding up through a cart at, you know, digitally, and just that spare change adds up to millions of dollars, which can then be donated to charities of choice that align with the company. There's just so much that can be done, and it really just depends on resources and what the goal is for your program.
Do employee volunteer programs affect the culture of the organization? Have you seen cases where they didn't have this, then they started it, and it changed people's relationships to each other at work? In other words, their culture, relationship to the organization. Does it have that kind of impact?
Very much so. First of all, it provides an opportunity for networking and bonding amongst your colleagues. And it's in a more of a laid-back atmosphere. You know, you have chance to kind of have small talk and also do something for good, which there's an intrinsic high that comes out from volunteering. So, you know, people end up feeling that, and that kind of gets assimilated with the company as well. You know, when you look at the HR piece of it, the recruiting and retention is huge for companies that have really great volunteer programs. You know, employees that volunteer are more present. They are higher producers usually in what their role is. So volunteer programs can change the landscape of a company greatly, and it can really kind of give people that work there a chance to be ambassadors for the brand. They just have to activate the program and kind of promote it, because as much as you want to believe that everyone wants to come out and volunteer, people are busy. And so you have to make it a priority to put together really great projects.
You know, I think whatever the leadership incentivizes is what they'll see being acted on. And so really, I imagine leading from the top, not only in word and deed, but also in the way you structure people's time and people's compensation, and really building these things and making them priorities and getting up underneath it in more than just a memo must be important.
It's hugely important to have C-suite support of, you know, anything that's corporate responsibility related, specifically volunteerism, makes all the difference, whether they're on site for the volunteer activities or they're one sending out messages to get people involved. It makes a difference for people to see that their leaders are truly engaged and truly committed to what the company is working towards. I've seen it happen time and time again.
What role does 1111 Consulting play in helping companies navigate this landscape? When someone comes to you to tap into your expertise, what do they get?
It's not a one-size-fits-all. It's really all over the place. So some companies come in and they really don't have anything. They've not started anything, which kind of is really a great opportunity to be really creative and look at what they do as a company and what causes to align them with, which programs make sense based on what resources they have available. Other times companies come in and they have a very specific project and they want someone to execute on certain items. A lot of times what I see is companies come in and they've been doing good efforts and they haven't really put any strategy to it. So, you know, it's really based on different employees or different leaders in the company that are passionate about different causes, and they've kind of in a grassroots effort started something on their own. No matter what, it's always interesting and it's always a good time because you're activating efforts that are going to help society. So whatever they can do, whatever they can make possible, I get to be the person that kind of helps that come to fruition.
That must put you in dialogue and interaction with lots of different stakeholders, both internally to the organization as well as with the nonprofits and perhaps even some third party providers. You mentioned a roundup campaign, point of sale campaign. That must mean that someone has to also program the cash registers or whatever they're called these days to do that kind of thing. So what are some of the different players involved in obviously there's a huge landscape out there, but who do you find yourself typically interacting with on all different sides of this?
That's the great thing about CSR right now, is it really is kind of a common ground for every part of the company. So you have to have the C-suite, you know, buy-in, and so they're kind of helping you with create the strategy. You have to have HR because you're looking to implement volunteer paid days off or different programs that'll engage employees. You have to work with legal because that's going to have something to do with the legal outlook. You do have to work with marketing as far as getting kind of awareness and visibility for the programs. Any tech side of the business, what's going on behind the scenes, you know, the intranet site, all of the communication tools that you would need to reach your constituency, you have to be engaged with. They work with everyone in the company. And so it's really a partnership role. And at a lot of companies, these are sole contributors. So this is someone that in a lot of cases is, you know, wearing a lot of hats and facilitating a lot of different work.
what kinds of roles within the company typically tend to take the lead on this kind of thing? Who wears the multiple hats?
Well, when I say that, I'm kind of speaking to the CSR executive. So I'm kind of saying that, you know, they have to have some kind of understanding of how these different parts of the business are going to play into the greater good of the program that they're creating and putting into place. So when I say they have to connect with HR, well, they have to understand, you know, what it looks like to work with an HR executive and kind of put as a part of the branding for the recruiting and retention, those stories that you want to activate, or the understanding of, you know, what percentage of employees are volunteering, because that's going to speak to millennials. That's going to speak to the people that they're trying to bring aboard that, you know, are looking at the full circle view. They're not just looking at what they're going to be compensated. They want to work for a company that has similar values to themselves.
As an outside consultant advising the CSR professionals or leaders within an organization, do you find that there are areas where there's difficulty getting alignment within the organization? Are you also in some ways coaching them on how to communicate about the initiatives internally? Or are you finding they're the ones telling you things that you didn't know about how to get that done? How does that play out on the communication and alignment side?
You know, it depends on the companies, but all too often it is me leading kind of them towards what they need to be doing in a partnership capacity. I don't think that they always have it clicked in as far as, you know, how much they have to be in touch with all of these different parts of the organization to have a successful program. So you kind of are having to tap people and activate them and let them know that, you know, I do need, you know, you to be a stakeholder in this project, and I do need to activate you and the services that your group does and kind of project manage, if you will, all of these different groups. Gosh, it would be easy to walk in and have everyone aligned and excited to see you. You know, there's always some outliers too. You know, not everyone has bought in to the whole CSR understanding of the way of doing business. The younger generation is on it for the most part. And so I see a lot of promise and a lot of opportunity as they kind of move into the ranks of a lot more different company roles.
One of the challenges for consulting firms, for small business owners who are in professional services of any kind working with larger companies, is that the culture of your operation and the culture of the company you're interacting with are so different. Timelines are different. Approval processes are different. Simply getting a check is something that many people who have moved out of the corporate landscape into independent agency or consulting roles are finding they have trouble navigating. It's a challenge to even educate your clients on how to do business with you. And one of the things that I have seen time and time again, including in my own private consulting practice, is there's a need to keep educating and keeping in front of the folks who might hire you, even though most of the time they're not actually ready to bring somebody on board. There was a study a few years ago, and I don't remember the specific details of it, but it was something like, of all of the ideal buyers for outside consulting services at any given time, less than 10% are actively looking for someone, and less than 2% are actively ready to do business with you.
Yeah.
So there's a challenge as a subject matter expert, as an outside agency or consulting firm ready to work with large organizations, you need to build those relationships. You need to educate and inform. And obviously, appearing on shows like this are a really good idea as part
Absolutely.
Of that. But what other sorts of activities do you do to help that business development process?
Well, it is an ebb and a flow, right? So sometimes you have all the opportunity coming into you, and then sometimes you're out and about trying to just have people understand the value that you can add to their organization. Because to your point, all too often, companies know that they need these efforts and they're willing to explore it, but then, you know, activating that piece is a whole nother story. You know, I lost my thought there. So,
what are some of the client projects that you may be able to speak about? Not everything may be publicly, you know, discussable, but what are some of the examples of a situation where this really made a difference? Something you're really proud of?
You know, recently I did a project for Child Help, and I don't usually have a lot of nonprofit clients, but in this instance, I have worked with them. I really believe in the mission. And I got to help them with their hotline campaign, 1-800 for a child. And essentially, this hotline is 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, and it speaks to, gosh, 70 different languages or so. and helps anyone who needs some kind of assistance and direction with abusive situations, whether they themselves are being abused or someone that they love. And so I got to help them put together kind of a platform, showcase what they're already doing for corporate sponsors, and then with the intention that they're enticing more to come on. John Stamos has come aboard as a celebrity spokesperson, and there's already a few corporate partners involved and lots of asks out. So they continue to gain momentum. But it was a really great campaign to be involved with because, you know, going back to my roots, it is something where I've driven home at the end of the day and been like, gosh, I help make a positive difference.
Absolutely. What are some of the specific situations that an executive might recognize as the time when it's a really good idea to reach out to 1111 Consulting? That maybe they have an existing corporate social responsibility program that they realize is just phoning it in and it's mm-hmm. not really producing results, or maybe they are a relatively new leader in this company and they came from a place that has a more established one, and then they don't see that here and it's missing. What are some of the situations when they might be looking at what's happening going, you know what, I think it's time to bring in a subject matter expert to help yeah. us guide us through this?
Sadly, sometimes it's a little bit behind the ball where they've already had some kind of negative backlash about some kind of operational thing that they've been involved with, and they're doing this in an effort, you know, to kind of get ahead of it and to kind of start launching something that'll, you know, mitigate that story and put some positive out instead. In those instances, it's not very successful because they really need to do it in the flip way. They need to first think about what they're doing and doing well, and then it's kind of an insurance policy of sorts, because then when something negative does come about, you know, they've been doing all this good work. You know, you look at a company like Tom's, and I always point to them because their whole brand is built off of this philosophy of, you know, buy one pair of shoes and another one goes to a child in a third world country. Well, let's just say Tom's had some kind of manufacturing, you know, debacle take place. Well, they already have all this positive energy out there that, you know, they're gonna get hit a little bit less. I see a lot of companies that are open to putting these programs into place when there's a change in leadership. I also see it when kind of they are getting ready to change their focus, getting ready to go public or something of that nature, because they understand they need to control the narrative and that they definitely want to have some more, some stories out there that are speaking to them as a great company, as opposed to just, you know, the bottom line.
It's easy to be somewhat cynical when it's only reactive and it seems like simply you know, an attempt after the fact to divert attention from a mistake. I would think, as again, an outsider without that kind of decision-making role over that kind of organization, that it would be much more sensible to get ahead of it in all ways, not only because it's the right thing to do, mm-hmm. but because it's smart and it's good for business as well. What are some of the things that a company should be thinking about in order to be more proactive, even if they're not yet ready to put something in place or change what they're already doing? What are some of the key issues in corporate responsibility today that they need to be aware of?
Well, I think there's a misguided viewpoint that it's super expensive to have a corporate responsibility program, because it's really not. It's about looking at what you do as a business and activating programs that work accordingly. Some companies, you know, find someone that's been within the ranks for some time and kind of give them an opportunity to segue into a new role. Which I think can be a really great way to put some manpower into a program. You know, the volunteer piece is just so important that I see a lot of companies do that first. I think it's probably the most important thing, and it's least expensive as well. I mean, you can put paid time off for volunteerism into your system. Everyone feels great about it. Sadly, only a small percentage of people use it. So there's a lot of things that they can do to be more proactive that kind of will set them up for success. It just so much depends on what their resources are. Some companies, all they have is money to give. So it's really about making sure that their agreements for sponsorship opportunities are negotiated in a way that's going to showcase them in the best light possible, where they're going to get value, as opposed to just, you know, mindless items on a sheet that they're going to take advantage of.
When it comes to spending money to contribute to organizations and the community, selecting the right charity partners, from the company's side of the equation, is an important part of the process. How should they go about doing that thoughtfully and strategically?
Really need to look at, you know, what you do as a company. Do you produce something? Are you providing a service? You know, I often look at like law firms. Now, law firms, they have a specialty skill set that can be leveraged to help any nonprofit. Nonprofits always need some kind of legal mind. CPA is similar. So you can do skilled volunteerism, depending on the kind of company you're from. You know, in my time at Microsoft, it was a lot about leveraging subject matter experts in the tech space to help nonprofits, as well as it was about putting their products into the community. So, you know, something's at an end of life cycle doesn't mean that a nonprofit can't make great use of it because their technology is probably much, you know, outdated, much more outdated than what Microsoft is going to donate to them. So really, you have to take a deep dive on what you do as a company. Then you need to look at the nonprofits that align with that. So if you're speaking to entrepreneurs, Kiva is a great partner because they work with entrepreneurs globally and they work with the smallest to the largest entrepreneurs. You know, if you're working with something that's really community related, you could look at Boys and Girls Clubs. It really depends on what you do as a company, and then you need to dig deep on the nonprofits. And sometimes it's going to be large ones, and sometimes it's going to be homegrown small ones, depending on the size of your company.
What are some of the shining examples that you can think of that a company might want to look at as, you know, corporate social responsibility done right? What you've mentioned a number of really great examples, Tom's and things. But what's one that you just love to give as an example of, you know, if we did this, it would work for us kind of a situation?
Well, I think it's all about leveraging the opportunities you have. So I have two in mind. Subaru does this Share the Love campaign, and they've been doing it the last few years. And what it does is when you come in to test drive a Subaru, then they donate $200. And it's been the ASPCA. They're a non-kill nationwide organization. So there's the alignment with that. That helps, you know, countless pups, countless animals, and they kind of have a great advertising campaign that goes along with it. Another one I've noticed that I think is interesting is Stella Artois, which is one that people don't really look towards. They've been involved with water.org. And Matt Damon, who's a part of water.org, has become the spokesperson for this campaign. And what it's done is it's taken the philosophy or the, you know, the concept of beer and drinking it out of a chalice. And every time you purchase one of these chalices, that money then goes towards to building water wells in third world countries. So it really is about looking at what your company does, whether you are, you know, a beverage product or, you know, what you can do as a service and leveraging it then to pay back to those who need it the most.
That's a really smart example, it seems to me, because the way to participate in that program is to acquire something, which also then communicates to everybody that you are someone who's done a good thing. And it has some of that nice feedback loop built in. As I said earlier, people need to not only do good, we all have this innate desire, I think, to do good and help others. The non-psychopaths among us anyway seem to have that. And yet at the same time, we are social animals. We need that admiration and approval from other people and finding subtle ways to allow us to do well and also be seen to be the kind of person who contributes, the kind of person who does well is really important. You know, making it too crass and too obvious doesn't work. Tyler, as you move forward into the future, what are some of your goals for your company? What's on the horizon for you? What are you excited about? And, you know, obviously, as a small business owner, it is feast or famine. I understand there's always an uneven landscape. We don't get to rest on our laurels. But what are you moving towards and what lights you up about that?
Well, I've got a lot of speaking engagements right now, so that's pretty cool because I feel like I get an opportunity to go out and kind of evangelize corporate social responsibility and share with people just the wealth of what giving back can mean to your organization. Looking at different projects right now that are kind of more of a holistic view that will give an opportunity to start from the ground up. So I've been going into a lot of different programs where I've had a little tiny piece of the pie and not really gotten to see the whole project come full circle. And so really excited about some coming up because I'm going to get to go in and really hit the strategy piece hard, which is my favorite because creating something from the ground up, there's just, you know, a great feeling about that. Putting into place branding for that program so it has to align with what the company's branding is, but be unique enough that the employees and that, you know, the general public can understand the difference. And then putting a variety of programs into place that are going to align them with the right nonprofits and activate their employees and help them, you know, just do some really great work that they might not have otherwise done.
What sorts of resources and capabilities do people get when they bring 1111 Consulting in? Obviously, there's your own deep subject matter expertise, but what else is available as part of those customized initiatives?
Yeah. I mean, well, there's the opportunity to really get some media attention for your efforts. I've, you know, had a pretty good background in media relations. And so having the chance to connect with, you know, different media sources and tell their story, I think is something, you know, really leveraging social media to the full capacity and how that can really help build your program. And I think just clever branding. I think that, you know, if you can really speak to people to get them engaged in the right way, that you're going to have a much more successful program. And so that's kind of where me and my team come into play.
Looking back over this journey of yours, you know, from the edge of the Grand Canyon all the way around your nomadic childhood through these big corporations to today, what's a lesson that stands out? Something that you've learned the hard way, that's how I only learn everything, that really inspires and informs what you do now?
I think every partnership and every introduction matters. You, especially in a role like this, the person that could be your biggest advocate and biggest helper could be, you know, someone who's in facilities or someone who's in a sales capacity or answering phones. And so really developing every relationship to its full capacity, taking each introduction seriously, because, you know, when you're running programs that are really meant to help other people, you really have to kind of live by that ethos and like showcase and share the opportunity for everyone to get involved.
Every conversation counts.
Yeah, every conversation counts.
That's really great advice. Tyler Butler, founder and CEO of 1111 Consulting. Where do people learn more about you and your work? How do they get in touch with you?
1111consulting.com. And also my blog is givinginstyle.net. Kind of speaks to the combination of fashion and philanthropy. So it's more of a passion piece. And then, of course, you can email me, Tyler, at 1111consulting.com.
I meant to ask you, actually, the hashtag giving in style is something that you have nurtured. Say a little bit more about that as we wrap up the show here. How does fashion and philanthropy play out in your work and
in
your life?
I have to give a quick plug to Front Doors Media because my column in Front Doors Media is also called Giving in Style. And Front Doors focuses on philanthropic stories throughout the Valley. And so really my column comes into play in that there is a synergy and a beauty behind, you know, the giving back piece. And there's a way to do it stylishly. And so I'm a fashion lover and philanthropy is really my passion. And so when you combine those two together, it's giving in style.
Well, that's fabulous. Tyler Butler from 1111 Consulting. Thank you for joining us in the studio today.
Thank you so much for having me.
For all of us here at Business Radio X, this is Dr. Adrian McIntyre, and we'll see you next time on Valley Business Radio.